It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 33 degrees under overcast skies. At the airport, they are indicating east winds at 5 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for most of the island anyway, for today and tomorrow, and Thursday as well. High near 40 today, south winds to 10, overnight low of 33 tonight with south winds to 15. Coming up on the Midday Report, Fire Protection Area Number 1, also known as Bayside Service Area, would like to cut the area's property tax rate by 10%. And educators flooded the Alaska Capitol yesterday in hopes of convincing legislators to support an override to Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of millions of dollars in school funding. We'll hear how that worked out.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Supreme Court is clearing the way for state law enforcement officers in Texas to arrest people suspected of being in the U.S. illegally. The conservative majority of the Supreme Court sided with the state of Texas on the law known as SB 4. The court's three liberal justices dissented. The Biden administration sued to block the enforcement of SB 4 on the grounds that it violated federal law. Polls have suggested immigration is among the issues with which President Biden's performance is widely considered to be weak. During two stops in key swing states of Arizona and Nevada today, Biden's reelection campaign is also attempting to address perceived weaknesses in support among Black and Latino voters, as well as education and the economy. We have more from NPR's Asma Khalid.
In Las Vegas, Biden will talk about his efforts to lower costs for American families. His domestic policy advisor, Neera Tanden, says the president will specifically focus on housing.
We know we need to increase housing supply to ensure that we can bring down the rents and the cost of homeownership. And that is the premier objective of this administration.
But a lot of this requires the help of Congress. Later in the day, the president will visit a local Mexican restaurant in South Phoenix to launch a new campaign effort to court Latinos. This comes as some polls have shown Biden losing support among Latino voters. Asma Khalid, NPR News.
A former Mississippi sheriff's deputy has been sentenced to 20 years in prison for his role in the torture of two Black men last year. Hunter Elwood was one of six officers who burst into a Rankin County home on January 24, 2023, without a warrant, and assaulted Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker with stun guns, a sex toy, and other objects. He also shot Jenkins in the mouth. Parker says he is satisfied with Elwood's sentence and forgives his attacker.
What, you know, is given and what is done, I forgive that part. But other than that, still, he still did, you know what I'm saying, what he did, and he has to be punished for that.
The other defendants are scheduled to be sentenced this week and next. After 5 months of war between Israel and Hamas, experts say the humanitarian crisis in Gaza is at unprecedented levels. NPR's Aya Batraoui reports on how civilians are attempting to survive with little to no food.
We spoke to Umma Muhammad al-Hamarna, a grandmother in Gaza City, who says she's foraging for leafy herbs to make soup. She says, you know, she has a grandson, and they're trying to find formula for him, and they can't find any in the market in the north, and that prices are so high on anything that is being sold. For example, a large sack of flour now costs $400 in northern Gaza.
That's NPR's Aya Batraoui. Meanwhile, Israeli forces continue to defend their military campaign, arguing that they're targeting Hamas militants hiding among civilians in Gaza. This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Board of Directors of the Kodiak Fire Protection Area No. 1, also known as Bayside Service Area, is seeking to cut their area's property tax rate, or mill rate, by 10%. That decision was a point of contention during the board's meeting last week. Residents across Kodiak Island Borough saw their property values increase up to 40% in some instances after this year's assessments went out in the mail at the beginning of the month. Fire Protection Area No. 1, which includes the areas north and east of Kodiak city limits out to the end of Menoshka Bay Road, was not immune to the increase. Board member Paul Van Dyke proposed a motion to amend the service area's budget before sending it to the borough for a final decision. He requested the board adjust its mill rate based on the unexpected additional revenue coming in from increased property assessment values.
And I don't think it's fair for us to take that windfall when we've been good about building this budget, and we can live within our means.
A mill rate is used by the borough to determine how much property tax is owed based on the property's assessed value. Two out of the five present board members were opposed to Van Dyke's motion. Scott Arndt, one of the board members against it, suggested that an open lawsuit against the Bayside Fire Department could impact the board's finances.
I think we need to leave the mill rate the same. We have a liability. We have a lawsuit. And the deductible of the borough is $100,000. And as we know from the past, that's come on to the fire district.
Arndt was referencing a civil lawsuit accusing the fire department and the borough of discrimination brought forward by former firefighter Rebecca Nelson. Van Dyke's motion to decrease the mill rate and adjust the service area's real property tax revenue to $700,000 was approved in a split vote, 3-2. The service area's updated budget now goes to the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly, which will make its final decisions on fiscal year 2025 numbers. But the borough doesn't have to finalize their budget until June. The Alaska legislature voted on Monday to sustain Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a bipartisan education bill that would have significantly increased funding for public schools. The joint session of the state, House, and Senate fell one vote short of the 40 needed to override the veto. Much of the discussion centered on whether Dunleavy would allow the increase to the base student allocation included in the bipartisan bill to survive a line item veto at the end of the session. Here's Representative Tom McKay, a Republican from Anchorage.
Voting to override today does not guarantee a BSA increase of any amount. I also support our governor and trust his sense on education.
The vote comes days after Dunleavy vetoed the measure, sparking rebukes from school districts and some lawmakers. Ahead of the session, leaders of the state House and Senate listed education funding as one of their top priorities and vowed to address the issue early. The bill passed the legislature overwhelmingly in February, but Dunleavy lobbied Republican lawmakers in recent days to sustain his veto. On Friday, Dunleavy repeatedly underscored his authority to reduce or eliminate budget items like education with line item vetoes at the end of the session. But Senator Bert Stedman, a Sitka Republican, said lawmakers should stand behind the compromise bill.
The governor has a constitutional right to veto appropriations and or shrink them. But we'll cross that bridge, and he will cross that bridge when they get there. But the real question is the foundation formula reasonably practical for most school districts?
Representative Craig Johnson, an Anchorage Republican, offered another perspective, saying a vote in favor of the override would provide false hope for school districts as they build their budgets for the coming school year.
The governor's already vetoed 680. What makes you think he's not going to do it again?
Christina Turman is a parent of two students at Pearl Creek Elementary in Fairbanks, where the school board is considering closing three schools. She flew down to Juneau to watch the vote.
It's really sad. It just feels like it's showing where our state's priority is, and it doesn't seem like it's been education for a long time.
Advocates dressed in red, some printed with the slogan "Red for Ed," packed the hallways outside the House chamber ahead of the vote. The governor applauded the legislature's vote in a statement on social media, saying, quote, education funding will be prioritized and available, close quote. Dozens of Juneau educators and residents flooded the Alaska Capitol on Monday afternoon in hopes of convincing legislators to support an override to Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of millions in state education funding. Juneau Education Association President Chris Heidemann says he's disappointed in the outcome.
Super disappointed, you know, especially to miss it by one vote. I know there was a lot of statements made that everybody in that room supports schools and supports kids, but that's not what they're showing people today.
Last week, the Juneau School District adopted a budget for the next school year that relies on school closures and reduction of staff to address a nearly $10 million budget deficit. It was built on the assumption that the state education funding would not increase, but the bill that Dunleavy vetoed would have given the district more than $5 million in additional state funding. Juneau Senator Jesse Keel voted in favor of the override. The Democrat says not providing that additional funding to Juneau and other school districts across the state will have lasting impacts.
We're going to close charter schools. We're going to have a lot of problems keeping open our neighborhood schools. This is a bad day for education in Alaska.
The Juneau School District is planning to eliminate nearly 50 staff positions next year, a necessary measure to reduce costs and to zero out its deficit. But district officials say that if the additional state funding comes through, it could potentially save some, if not all, the jobs slated to be cut. In addition, they say more funding could also alleviate other cost-cutting measures, such as lowering the district's pupil-to-teacher ratios next year, which will increase across all grade levels, likely meaning bigger class sizes. Juneau Representative Sarah Hannon says, though she's disappointed in the failure to override, the conversation about education funding in Alaska is far from over.
Education's not resolved, and it will continue to be a prime piece of dialogue and work.
With the remaining time left in the session, lawmakers have the ability to pass a one-time funding boost for education like they did last year, though that funding could also be subject to another veto by Dunleavy. The federal government owes Alaska more than $700 billion in compensation for the 2023 Environmental Protection Agency action that blocked development of the massive and controversial Pebble Mine in southwest Alaska. That's what Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration claims in a lawsuit filed in a federal court last week. As reported by the Alaska Beacon, the lawsuit filed on Thursday was in the U.S. Court of Federal Claims in the District of Columbia and is part of a flurry of legal actions by the state and the mine's would-be developer that seek to revive the massive copper and gold project. The state and company's legal actions follow an unsuccessful attempt by the Dunleavy administration to have the matter decided directly by the U.S. Supreme Court. In its complaint, the state cited an estimate for 100 years of production to support the $700 billion figure, and it said Alaska had been depending on Pebble for development of its economic future. Alaska has submitted to the federal government a first-of-its-kind plan to reduce statewide greenhouse gas emissions that drive global warming. As Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports, it's part of the Biden administration's ambitious effort to tackle climate change.
President Biden has committed the U.S. to cut its emissions roughly in half by 2030. One of the administration's biggest tools is the Inflation Reduction Act. The law passed in 2021 and directed billions of dollars to help fight climate change. To access some of that money, states are required to submit something called a Climate Action Plan, which outlines their biggest sources of emissions and ideas to reduce them. Alaska changed the name slightly, calling it a Sustainable Energy, not Climate Action Plan. Department of Environmental Conservation Program Manager Morgan Frank led work on the project.
We were really focused on energy in this priority phase. That's where we keep hearing a lot of grantee interest around making energy more affordable, more sustainable. And, you know, since we're focusing on that, we decided to call it that.
The plan lists 17 priorities, mostly focused on building more renewable energy and helping homes and businesses become more energy efficient. One proposal would expand the Bradley Lake Hydroelectric Project to supply more clean energy to the rail belt. Another effort would replace fossil fuel heating with more efficient electric heat pumps in Southeast Alaska homes. Another project would fund weatherization for homes statewide. That can mean adding insulation or upgrading windows and doors to make a house more energy efficient. Griffin Plush with the Alaska Municipal League worked on the plan. He said weatherization especially can cut families' energy bills.
We know that residential weatherization makes a really big impact in terms of energy burden for individual families in Alaska.
The plan also lists the biggest sources of emissions in the state, including industry, electricity generation, and air transportation. The emissions impact from oil that's produced in Alaska but burned elsewhere isn't included in the state's analysis. The plan also does not include proposals to cut emissions from the oil and gas industry. Jenny Marie Stryker, political director for the Alaska Center, says this plan is a good first step. She says it will allow Alaska to take advantage of the historic amount of climate funding available today.
There is such an incredible opportunity to transition in Alaska, and Alaskans know what Alaskans need. So I think it's really just a matter of getting as much federal dollars as we can out of it.
This plan is the beginning of a longer process. In order to stay eligible for federal climate funding, the state will have to produce a more detailed plan next year and set clear targets for cutting carbon emissions going forward. Meanwhile, grant applications to fund the projects listed in the most recent plan are due next month. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
The Asian American Pacific Islander community in Anchorage made history this weekend. The group held its very first mayoral forum at the Asian Alaska Cultural Center in Spinard. 7 of the 10 candidates accepted the invitation, and KNBA's Rhonda McBride was there too.
First, a little disclosure. As a Japanese American, I was invited to moderate this forum, but the committee that organized this event came up with the format and all of the questions. All I had to do was make introductions and keep the conversation moving. Our timekeeper, Siraj Betterai, was nervous. He'd never done anything like this before, but he, like many others at this event, were excited to be part of this first-of-a-kind forum.
Olea onga, lau tele. Aleatanu'u, O Anchorage.
Lucy Hansen, a representative of the Samoan community, read the first question. It was about a minute long and set up to be a trick question.
Mafa'atinoino se fainga fa'avai.
After Lucy was done, I immediately went to the first candidate in queue.
It's a very long question, but we're going to begin with Phil Isley.
Go over the question again because I'm not sure I understood that at all.
I am just kidding. This was for effect.
The forum committee wanted the candidates to experience the frustration immigrants feel when they face language barriers. Phil Isley was a good sport. I quickly translated the question. It was about the City of Anchorage's language access policy that requires city departments to learn how to assist citizens with language barriers. Phil Popp says he has a plan to implement this.
So under my administration, we'd be working hard first and foremost to inventory the language skills that we have within municipal staff, and to know where they're located, and to do our best to make sure that every department is aware of those individuals to immediately be able to tap them as a resource.
For the most part, the candidates agreed on just about everything, except when they were asked about how Asians in Anchorage were targeted by hate crimes during the height of COVID. Candidates Chris Tuck and Suzanne LaFrance said the mayor has a role to play in preventing hate crimes. Breck Craig acknowledged it was a problem. Mayor Dave Bronson wasn't sure.
Well, it does begin with public education. We need to educate one another. We need to share and celebrate our differences.
Racism, we know it exists, and it's unacceptable. I'm truly sorry for those individuals in our community who experienced that during COVID.
I remember talking to some of my Asian friends, and it was a real problem.
I don't recall racism as a consequence of COVID. If it happened, I'm happy to be informed.
Phil Isley says preventing racism begins with access.
How many of you have gone down to City Hall and failed to get
what you were asking for because they didn't understand you. Can you raise your hand?
The answers did vary widely on the last question. What was each candidate's favorite food?
Thai Kitchen in Midtown's pretty dang good.
Keema curry is, you know, near and dear to my heart.
Well, a sushi roll over at Ronnie, too, is really, really good.
My dad is half Mexican and half Irish, so I tell people I can eat and drink anything.
I'm going to go with Bombay Deluxe.
And that segued nicely to the reception, where the candidates were treated to an Asian potluck dinner. There was Filipino pancit, Indian curry chicken, spicy Thai papaya salad, and much more. Organizers say the reception was a chance for people at the gallery to meet the candidates, to do away with the stereotype that Asians and Pacific Islanders are a silent minority. About 70 people attended the forum, which organizers hope will be the first of many. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Juneau Animal Rescue is rehoming a bunch of tarantulas. KTOO's Yvonne Crumry has more.
The 16 tarantulas arrived about 3 weeks ago, along with a few other animals. Two bearded dragons, a ball python, four cats, and two dogs, according to Juneau Animal Control Officer Karen Wood. She says it's not often that Juneau Animal Rescue receives this many animals from one home.
It's an animal control case where we took custody of the animals by request of the police, and when that happens, we hold animals for a 10-day safekeep period.
The safekeep period applies to arrests, hospitalizations, and other short-term emergencies, and can be longer, depending on the situation. After 10 days, if the owners don't make a plan to retrieve an animal, they become property of the rescue. The organization treats any medical issues, spays or neuters, and microchips the animals, and then puts them up for adoption. The tarantulas could skip a few of those steps. The ball python and 14 spiders have already found new homes. And one is now a long-term resident of the rescue, living in a terrarium upstairs by the staff desks. She's dark, fuzzy, and about the size of a Thin Mint cookie.
This one's our office pet, so she'll get to be like this big, 6 to 7 inches.
Wood says finding places to put all the animals was challenging. Normally, they put smaller animals, like rabbits, where they can make space, often a hallway. But in that environment, one of the bearded dragons started turning black, which Wood says is a sign of stress. So they moved the spiders and the lizards into a room used for grooming dogs and brought in a space heater.
Just because we don't have a good space, a warm space, and a quiet space.
Now, the bearded dragon is back to its normal tan coloring. One tarantula and both dragons are still waiting for their forever homes. Juneau Animal Rescue has been struggling with capacity for years. The organization is looking to expand into a bigger space soon, with more room to house all the animals that need shelter.
We're pretty cramped. This building's been here a long, long time.
Wood says she hopes that one day there'll be plenty of space for tarantulas and dragons that need a place to stay on their way to a loving home. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry.
Congressional leaders have reached a deal to fund the government. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute. Republican Speaker of the House Mike Johnson and Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer announced the agreement for the current fiscal year, which began nearly 6 months ago. Congress has been using temporary authorizations to keep the government running ever since. The deal still needs to be drafted into legislation. There's a shutdown deadline this weekend. The European Union's foreign policy chief is proposing using income from some $200 billion in frozen Russian investments to supply Ukraine with more weapons. EU leaders are scheduled to meet later this week. New York State authorities say bonuses on Wall Street last year averaged $177,000, a 2% decline from the year prior. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 19th day of March, the year 2024. The sun rose today at 8:12. It will set again at 8:23. That will give us 12 hours and 11 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of exactly 5 minutes compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 50 degrees. That was set in 1935. And our record low was 5, set in Chile, 1991. It is currently 33 degrees under overcast skies. Here in Kodiak, they have east winds at 5 miles per hour, and out at the airport, they are looking at 10 miles of visibility. This afternoon, the Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies, at least for most of the island. Mostly sunny skies tomorrow, too, and Thursday, with just a chance of rain on Friday starting in the morning, but partly sunny skies on Friday as well. Look for south winds to 10 today and to 15 tonight, turning to the southwest and coming all the way down to 5 tomorrow. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for tonight and Wednesday. For tonight, look for south winds to 20 knots and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, south 20, seas to 8 feet. And for tomorrow night, southwest 20, seas at 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southeast 20 tonight with seas to 3 feet. South 15 tomorrow with 3-foot seas. And southwest 15 tomorrow night with seas to 4 feet. Looking at our local tides, we do have an outgoing tide. It just turned in the last hour or so. Our next low tide here on the east side will happen at 6.03 p.m. and be 9/10 of 1 foot, followed by a high tide at 12.53 a.m., almost 1 a.m., of 6.1 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 6.21 p.m. and be 1.8 feet, followed by a high tide at 1.19 a.m., of 10 feet in Larsen Bay. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings.
On Tuesday, March 19th, there's 3 meetings. At 1 p.m., the Solid Waste Contract Committee is having a regular meeting in the Borough Conference Room. At 5:30 p.m., the Women's Bay Service Area Board is having a budget public hearing in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. And at 6:30 p.m., Service Area Number 1 Board is having a budget public hearing in the Borough Assembly Chambers. On Wednesday, March 20th at 6:30 p.m., the Planning and Zoning Commission is having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. And on Thursday, March 21st at 6:30 p.m., the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly is having a regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers.
All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 for any questions. The Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op and Kodiak College's Kamai Club will be welcoming Tim and Lisa Myers of Myers Farms in Bethel for a short video presentation and a community discussion with a Q&A on Thursday, March 21st, that's Thursday at 6 p.m. at Kodiak College, and popcorn will be provided. Myers Farms seeks to provide quality, fresh, local, and affordable produce to Bethel and its surrounding communities. Myers Farm uses a variety of environmentally friendly methods to grow healthy crops without relying on synthetic pesticides or herbicides and keeping consumers and the environment healthy through sustainable practices. Again, that's happening on Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Kodiak College. And popcorn will be provided. That's from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Learn effective tools for how to process feelings of pain and loss while also learning how to live with grief in a manageable way. The Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak is having their Grief Recovery Method 8-week grief group. This will be done with an interactive and supportive environment with grief specialist Juliana Belden. This next class is on Thursday. That's between 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. at the Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. You need to pre-register, and you can do that at www.hpck.org or call them on the phone at 907-512-0600. And again, that's this next Thursday, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. And it's time for FanCon. It's returning this Friday and Saturday, March 22nd and 23rd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day at the library. I think that's Friday and Saturday, the 22nd and 23rd. There's something for everyone, from cosplay to video games, trivia, and more. Stop in or call the library for specific times for panels and events. FanCon is free to the public, no registration is required, and it's open to all ages. Again, that's March 22nd and 23rd, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the library.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.